Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Welcome to the 327th episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I'm your host, Randy Winograd. In this edition of the podcast, our topics are a review of Patrick's weekend predictions, a look at week 12 of the college football season and week 11 of NFL action, our weekly look at the NBA, and our weekly recap of the past week in college basketball. Let's jump right in with a look back at Patrick's weekend predictions, starting in college football, where Patrick went 3-1. In the NFL, Patrick went 2-2. In the NBA, Patrick went 2-2. And in NCAA basketball, went 3-1, second consecutive week where Patrick's gone 2-2 in two categories, 3-1 in another, but mixed up a little bit. But that means for the second straight week, Patrick went 10-6 with his weekend predictions, and that brings him to a 1,385 and 869 overall record, a 61.4% winning percentage. Patrick, your thoughts on your weekend predictions?
Well, for the second week in a row, I thought I had pretty good predictions. Obviously, I would like to go better than 2-2 in the leagues that I did, but satisfied overall with the 10-6 overall record, as you said. We'll start in college basketball since there was some confusion there, actually. I labeled Purdue and Alabama wrong with the wrong colors. I did intend to pick Alabama. I intended to pick the number 8 ranked home team, but I put number 8 Purdue and put them as the home team and put them in black and gold. So that was my bad. But I did predict Alabama. They did lose 87-80. So I got that one wrong. But all of the other predictions that didn't have errors in them were also the other correct predictions. So number 5, Arizona beat number 15, UCLA, 69-65. Number 3, UConn beat number 7, BYU, 86-84. And Nebraska beat Oklahoma, 105-99. All of those were correct predictions for me. So happy that early on in the college basketball season, I'm already getting a feel back for that sport that I always pay a lot of attention to and typically have the best record in every week. Then in the NBA, the Knicks beat the Heat, 140-132. The Pistons beat the Sixers, 114-105. Both of those NBA Cup games, both of those wins for me. And then my only loss in NBA Cup predictions was the Warriors, who beat the Spurs, 109-108. Spurs had a lead in a lot of that game, had a chance to win the game. De'Aaron Fox's shot rimmed out. It was close, but not quite. And the Warriors won that NBA Cup game. And then in the only game that I predicted this week that wasn't an NBA Cup game, the Nuggets beat the Timberwolves, 123-112. So a good week, I guess, in NBA. I don't feel too bad about a one-point loss and two wins. And then in the NFL, I picked the Bills to beat the Buccaneers, which they did, 44-32. I picked the Eagles to beat the Lions, which they did, 16-9. And then the two other games are really, really close. One team lost on a last-second field goal. The other team won on a last-second missed field goal. I picked the Rams to lose to the Seahawks because it was an emotional hedge for me. I wanted to take something out of if the Rams had lost, but I did think the Rams were going to win, but I also have been picking at least one underdog every week. And I thought the Seahawks probably had the best chance to just kind of stop the Rams offense from really doing much. And they actually did a good job of doing that. The real issue was that they turned the ball over 4 times and they gave the Rams short fields too many times. And the Rams took advantage of that and ended up with the win. And then the Broncos beat the Chiefs 22-19. The Broncos were the other underdog I considered picking. I didn't end up picking them. And I guess I should have, because the Chiefs, as you now know, lost that game 22-19 on a short Will Lutz field goal at the end of the game. So 2-2 in the NFL. And then in college football, I actually didn't pick an underdog here either, but that's because a lot of these favorites were very, very solid. And honestly, the one that I would have picked wouldn't have been right. I would have picked USC to lose to Iowa at home. That was probably the only game where I felt maybe I could have picked the underdog. I mean, it would have been an okay pick, but USC won that game. I stuck with that pick. They won 26-21. Notre Dame just demolished Pitt 37-15. And Georgia demolished Texas 35-10. But the only prediction that I got wrong was Oklahoma going on the road and beating number four Alabama 23-21. That one, really, though, another story of a team just turning the ball over a ton, despite dominating all the possession, statistics and yard statistics. I mean, that was actually a common theme this weekend, when you consider the Rams game, the Oklahoma game, and then we'll get to another one of those games later, in the action.
All right, that wraps up our look at Patrick's weekend predictions. As always, his predictions for next weekend will be posted on our social media, 4th and 24, the various social media handles on Thursdays. Let's continue talking about college football with a look back at Week 12 action.
The week started off with a pretty big upset, as Clemson went on the road and beat Louisville, who's number 20, ranked in the country. Obviously, Clemson entering with a rough season, 4-5 overall heading into this game, just 3-4 in ACC play, but they did pull out this win against Louisville. They're still 5-5 on the season. I mean, they're going to make a bowl game, but it's been a rough year, for the Tigers. Meanwhile, Louisville kind of takes themselves, not kind of, they took themselves out of playoff contention. With this win, because not only are they now going to probably end up outside of the top 25, but they have three conference losses, so they're not going to make the ACC title game, in all likelihood either. So big swing there in that game. Then you have Arizona, who went on the road and beat number 25 Cincinnati. So Arizona now 7-3 on the season. Cincinnati also 7-3, 5-2 in the Big 12, with that non-con loss to Nebraska. Maybe Arizona vies for a ranked bid. At this point, I don't know if they do get ranked. I don't personally think they are going to be, but there are a lot of different potential three loss teams that could be ranked. Maybe they're one of them, especially after this good road win. But that really, really, really messes with Cincinnati's chances to win the Big 12. A loss that you can't take. To I'm not saying Arizona's a bad team, but they're not necessarily the top of the conference at all. And that's heading into a week where now Cincinnati has to play BYU at home and TCU on the road next week. And both of those now are must-win games. Whereas if you had beaten Arizona, you could probably drop the game to TCU, and a win over BYU would give you the tiebreaker in that tie. So that would be important enough that maybe with those two conference losses, but a win over BYU, you might still get in the Big 12 championship game. But now you have to beat BYU, absolutely. And you have to go beat TCU because three losses in conference is not going to be enough to make the conference championship game. Currently, they're in a four-way tie for third place with Utah, Houston, and Arizona State being the other four teams there. And BYU is second at 6-1 in conference play. Then you have Navy, who beat number 24 USF. USF now 7-3 on the season. At various points throughout the season, they've looked like the best team in the American. Then it slipped up when they lost to Memphis. There's been kind of a revolving door in the American Conference, and it doesn't seem like that's ending anytime soon. But you have to be very, very happy with this win if you're Navy, because now it puts you at the top of the standings in the conference at 6-1. And then you still have North Texas, who's still 5-1 in conference. Tulane is 5-1 in conference. And shockingly, East Carolina is 5-1 in conference. No one has talked about them at all this season, but they've played really, really well, albeit against a much easier schedule. They haven't really played any of the top teams until this week, though, when they beat Memphis. So they do have that win going for them. Their only losses this season are at Tulane against BYU and at NC State. So pretty good team that not a lot of people are talking about pretty much at all. But we'll see what happens in the American race. It's going to be a crazy one until the end of the season. Then you have USC, who beat Iowa, like I mentioned in predictions. Iowa started off this game up 14-0. USC gave up a touchdown on the opening drive and then gave Iowa a short field going for it on fourth down in their own territory. Iowa cashed that in. And then USC's defense figured out how to play for the rest of the game. And USC outscored Iowa 26-7 in the rest of the game and ended up with the, I will not say easy victory, but a win that ended up being maybe more comfortable than the scoreboard would indicate. They kind of just controlled the second half especially because Iowa did literally nothing on offense. So that 21-10 halftime lead was easily erased by the Trojans with strong defense, which is obviously not necessarily their calling card. But then you have Georgia Tech. This game was not easy at all against 1-10 Boston College, 0-7 in the ACC now. But Georgia Tech did win 36-34. They moved to 9-1 on the season, 6-1 in ACC play. 19 fourth quarter points to mount their comeback to beat the Eagles there. That was a rough game for Georgia Tech. They continue to not really pass the eye test of a top 15 team. But here we are. They probably will be ranked there next week because of some of the teams that lost. Maybe they won't be. Who knows? But speaking of one of those teams who lost, number five, Georgia lost. I mean, sorry, number five, Georgia beat number 10, Texas. Texas had an opening drive touchdown and really did nothing for the rest of the game. I mean, or opening drive field goal, excuse me. That was a great drive. And it looked like, maybe Georgia was doing the same thing it had done in other games where they might give up some points in the first half. And then in the second half, they just settle in and dominate the game. But they chose to dominate earlier defensively this time. 14-3 was the halftime score. Texas did not score after that opening drive script. And that was only a field goal anyway. And then in the third quarter, they got one touchdown back to make it close-ish heading into the fourth, but it really didn't feel like much of a 14-10 game, even though that's what the score line said it was. And then Georgia just completely turned it on in the fourth quarter, 21 unanswered points to notch a 35-10 victory. Then you have Oklahoma, who started out up 10-0 over Alabama. Really just a penalty, not a penalty, a turnover aided game for Oklahoma. They scored on short field after short field, and Alabama really kind of just threw this game away. I mean, they missed a field goal at the end of the first half that obviously in the end ended up being the difference in the game. And that has been an issue all season long is Alabama's kicking game. And it really came back to bite them in this game. They punted on their first drive. Oklahoma got a field goal. And then they went 60 yards down the field all the way to the 13-yard line. But Ty Simpson threw a pick six on Oklahoma's 13 in Oklahoma's red zone at the 23. So the 87-yard pick six happens after Alabama had drove all the way down the field. And with just 27 total yards, Oklahoma had a 10-0 lead, which makes no sense. But it happened. Then Alabama did go back down the field and scored a touchdown. But then Alabama muffed a punt. So, or not muffed a punt, but fumbled a punt. So Oklahoma, two plays, 31 yards for a touchdown. And all of a sudden, 17 points. They had like 60 total yards. So Alabama really, again, just threw this game away. I mean, Oklahoma had almost more drives on their second punt of the game than they did on either of their touchdown drives. So, or any of their scoring drives for that matter. 29 yards to punt, 31 yards to score a touchdown, 23 yards to kick a field goal, and a pick six. So Oklahoma just was gifted this game on a silver platter, and they took advantage of it. Give some credit to their defense for forcing all of those turnovers and for taking advantage of short fields. I mean, Alabama fumbled at 31-yard line, and in the end, that killed a drive, and then Oklahoma only needed to go 20 yards to kick another field goal, and that was the game-winning field goal. So Alabama just turned it over, turned it over, turned it over like there was no tomorrow. Outgained Oklahoma 406-212, but three turnovers was the huge difference in this game. And Oklahoma able to secure the victory off the turnover battle. So they took advantage of what they were given, and in the end, it gave them a win. Then you have the weirdest game of the week, I would argue. South Carolina jumped out to a 30-3 halftime lead over previously unbeaten Texas A&M. And then South Carolina completely collapsed again. They just had nothing going in the second half. A&M scored three touchdowns in the third quarter to make it a really close game heading into the fourth. And you still thought, well, maybe South Carolina has an answer back. They're up 30-24 still. They probably need a score or two to maybe put this game away, run some clock. They didn't have a score or two. They had zero scores. A&M ended up scoring one more touchdown, won the game 31-30. Just a ridiculous comeback. I mean, 30-3 is a margin that you're never supposed to be able to come back from, no matter who the opponent is. I don't care if the team is 3-7 at 1-7 in the SEC. That is a ridiculous comeback. And then following the same script of that Oklahoma-Alabama game, there was Michigan's game against Northwestern, where Michigan did escape with a 24-22 victory on a walk-off field goal. But just like Oklahoma, they outgained Northwestern by a ton. I mean, this was 496 to 245 in total yards, but five turnovers from Michigan, three fumbles, two interceptions from Bryce Underwood. Michigan got banged up further in this game, losing Jordan Marshall to an injury. Justice Haynes already going to be out for a while. And then on the Northwestern side of things, you've had four games, or sorry, three games now, to finally get the one win to get to bowl eligibility. Now all of a sudden, it's going to come down to beating Minnesota or beating Illinois on the road, which that second one doesn't seem too likely. So Northwestern, from looking like an automatic bowl game team, not necessarily so automatic anymore. But I do think they probably could win that Minnesota game. I think they are favored in that game. I think, if you look at analytics, they'd probably say Northwestern should win that game, but that doesn't mean they will. So it's an interesting battle there at Wrigley Field. But Michigan, lucky to escape with a victory. Northwestern, lucky that the game stayed close, I guess would be the best way to frame it, because that could have been just like the Oklahoma-Alabama game for Michigan, where they thoroughly outplayed the other team and just didn't come up with the victory like the Crimson Tide did over the weekend. But Michigan got the better end of it, even though they turned the ball over more times than Alabama did.
And missed two field goals, but yes, flipped script games there. Both a lesson in how to lose a game on the road against a team you should beat. That Michigan narrowly averted that disaster, and the Alabama-Oklahoma game. How to lose a game at home that against a team that you are favored to beat. Closer matchup in that Oklahoma-Alabama game. But another great weekend of college football. Never disappoints. Heading into the home stretch here with the final couple weeks of the regular season coming up. But let's move off of college football and move over to the NFL with a recap of Week 11 action.
Well, the week was bookended by some uninteresting Thursday night football and some uninteresting Monday night football. But the Broncos did beat the Chiefs 22-19. I'd like to talk about the playoff picture in the AFC now, with I know it's just one game in to this recap, but it is important because it's a weird year in the NFL. You have the Broncos and the Patriots leading their divisions. The Bills in the wild card and the Chiefs outside of the playoffs and the Ravens on the outside looking in, which means, I don't know, we're back in like the Peyton Manning, Tom Brady days with the bad Joe Flacco year or something. Also, the Colts are leading their division. So maybe we're back even further than that. Maybe this is the Brock Osweiler Broncos, and I don't know, Peyton Manning still in the Colts or something. I don't know, something like that. But regardless, it's important to note that, we've talked about the Ravens this season as a Super Bowl favorite type of team that hasn't had a great season because of injuries, and has had to claw their way back, but they still have the divisional route to go because the Steelers haven't really looked the part of really a 6-4 team or of a division leader at all. But the Chiefs, this was their real last opportunity to kind of bring this division into their grasp, and they didn't. I mean, they have been. I think they said yesterday, they mentioned, or Sunday, excuse me, on the broadcast, they had like a billion stats about how Mahomes basically never loses to the Broncos. And they have maybe one loss since he's been the starter with him playing in the game. I think they might have lost a game when they were resting players. But overall, they just dominate the Broncos. And all of a sudden, they really, really needed this game, and they still couldn't come up with it. So now you have a Broncos team who is 6-0 at home, that is now 9-2 overall, and has beaten both of the two Super Bowl teams from last year. They've beaten the Eagles and the Chiefs, albeit they had some weak performances by those opposing teams. But maybe you could just say that's because the Broncos defense is that good. And I think there's a legitimate argument for that. But the point is that the Chiefs are now 9th in the playoff race. And if you look at some of the teams that are ahead of them, yes, they do have the win, or excuse me, they have lost to the Bills, and they have lost to the Jaguars. So the number five team and the number seven team, and actually the number six team too, because the Chargers are also in the wild card, they don't have the tiebreaker over any of those teams. So it's going to be hard for them to make the playoffs because they are going to have to be a game ahead of all of those teams to actually make the playoffs at the end of the season. And I don't think they're going to win this division, considering they're 3.5 back this late into the season. So it's a rough road for Kansas City. It's not a guarantee that this team makes the playoffs anymore. And this week was a big factor in that. And obviously, they might look back at a game like the one against Jacksonville at the end of the season and say, wow, we should have had that one and we let it slip away. And it might be the difference between them making the playoffs and missing the playoffs, because I would argue that Jacksonville is probably the most vulnerable team in that race currently that is on the right side of the playoff bracket. And the Chiefs, even if they end up with the same record as Jacksonville, they're not getting in. Jacksonville has that tiebreaker, like I said. But speaking of the Ravens and that playoff picture in the AFC, they barely escaped the Browns. 13 fourth quarter points to win 23 to 16. Really, a big factor in this game was a lot of turnovers by the Ravens. Once again, looked just like the Seahawks game, just like the Rams game, just like the Michigan game, where one team was definitely the better team, but just did not play like it at all when it comes to taking care of the ball. Lamar Jackson, two interceptions. If you look at the combined stats, though, of the quarterbacks on the other end, Lamar threw for 193 yards on 25 attempts. Dylan Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders combined threw for 81 yards on 26 attempts. So, not too great from that Brown side. And even Baltimore also rushed the ball more efficiently, 184 yards on the ground compared to Cleveland's 106. So, just a lot of a better performance yards wise from the Ravens. But the Browns did a good job of controlling the turnover battle, even though Shedeur Sanders threw an interception in this game. Lamar, as I said, threw two, and the Ravens lost a fumble. So Ravens had better possession, better yardage, better everything, but it still took them clawing back in the fourth quarter to actually get the win. Although importantly, they are still just one game back of the Steelers heading into a week where they play the Jets, which should be another easy win. They've now won four in a row, including all three of Lamar's starts since he came back from injury. And then they have the Bengals and the Steelers. And the Bengals again, and then of course the Steelers to end the season. So all you need to do is beat a team that in theory is the Bengals without Joe Burrow, at least for one of those games. Maybe he'll be back for the second one, or could be back for the first one, who knows? But beat the Jets and move to 6-5 and let everything else take care of itself, I think is what the Ravens need to be doing at this point. And I think there's a pretty good chance that they do that. I think there's a pretty good chance they win their division. But they're probably not going to make the playoffs through the wild card, just like we talked about. The AFC is kind of stacked in the wild card, especially with teams like the Bills and the Chiefs, who are preseason Super Bowl favorites that are still fighting for spots with pretty established division winners at the top of their own divisions. And speaking of that wild card race, once again, the Chargers lost to the Jaguars 35-6. I don't know what to make of this Chargers team. It seems like every single time you get some belief in them, they just randomly lose by a ton to a team that they probably should be beating in the first place. This was another one of those weeks. The Jaguars just thoroughly outplayed the Chargers. They moved to 6-4. Chargers fall to 7-4, which means that, of course, the Chargers still in the sixth seed in the AFC, but the Jaguars now at the seventh seed with some important games coming up near the end of the season. Many divisional matchups left to go, including against the Texans, who are 5-5 now, and we'll get to that later. And then the Colts, obviously, who are one of the better teams in the league. Then you have the Steelers. Speaking of that AFC North division, they moved to 6-4 by beating the Bengals 34-12, but they lost Aaron Rodgers in this game with a wrist injury. So we'll see what happens with him moving forward. We don't necessarily know the severity of that injury, if it's severe and it's long term. Could be a big problem for the Steelers moving forward. Then you have the Packers, who barely beat the Jameis Winston-led Giants 27-20, but they did get the win. They are 6-3-1, but they're still not atop their division because the Chicago Bears are the team leading that NFC North division. They beat their divisional foes, the Vikings, 19-17. J.J. McCarthy in the first game against the Bears in his first career start looked horrible, and then in the fourth quarter, led two touchdown scoring drives to take the lead and win the game. This week, he did the same exact thing. He looked horrible in the first three quarters, and then at the end of the game, led two touchdown drives to take the lead. But the difference was this time the Bears had an answer. They went back down the field, got a game-winning field goal by Cairo Santos. Their second, maybe even third. I know for a fact there has been two, but maybe there have been three. Game-winning field goal win with time expiring for the Bears. That means they are 7-3 on the season. They are currently the third seed in the NFC with the narrow lead over the Packers, who were 6-3-1, and the Lions, who are 6-4 now. And we'll talk about that in a second. But jumping back to the AFC really quickly, the Texans won 16-13 against the Titans. Of course, Davis Mills was the quarterback in this game, so don't put too much stock into the Texans almost losing this game. Although, I have said throughout the year that I don't really understand what the hype around this team is. Defense played, I guess, okay in this game. 13 points isn't a lot to give up, but you have to consider the 1-9 offense that they were playing on the other side. And Davis Mills could have been a lot better, but we'll see. I guess if he can just keep this team afloat while CJ Stroud remains out, Stroud might come back soon enough, though, and that they might even rush him back, considering how the games with Mills have gone. Two narrow victories over teams that arguably they should be beating by decent margins. Then you have the Bills, who beat the Buccaneers. This game was just back and forth, but at some point, it stopped being back and forth, and it started being more just Bills, Bills, Bills. Especially in the second half, it was 21-20 at the half. But then the Buccaneers were slowed down on offense just a little bit, just one or two stops by the Bucs, or excuse me, by the Bills on the Bucs offense. Really, turnovers killed the Buccaneers in this game. But the Bills, very, very efficient on offense. They knew they needed to win this game, even though it's a cross conference game. I think just getting that confidence back that they can beat those good teams back to back after they had beaten the Chiefs last week, I think was a big deal for them, or excuse me, had beaten the Chiefs 2 weeks ago. And then also they had the Dolphins loss sandwiched in between that. So they needed a bounce back. They needed to prove that, this is still a dominant team, a team that should be maybe winning the division, if not at least trending towards it. But good win for the Bills. Another good win was the Panthers going on the road, beating the Falcons 30-27 in overtime. Bryce Young had probably the best game of his career in this game. And it was a really important time for that to happen because the Panthers needed that win to stay in contention, not only in the wild card, but also in their division. Bryce Young, again, throwing for 448 yards in this game. So great performance by him. They needed it, though, because they are now 6-5, but that's not enough to be in the playoffs just yet. They're still a game behind that spot. But they are only one game back of, or sorry, half a game back of the Buccaneers, who are 6-4, leading that division. So very important matchups incoming late in the season. Those two play each other two of the final 3 weeks of the year. So Bucks, Bucks Panthers will be a division deciding matchup by the end of the season when they play each other twice. Then you have the Eagles, who are 8-2. They beat the Lions in a really odd Sunday night football game, 19-6 or 16-9, excuse me. The Lions just kept going for it over and over and over again, as always under Dan Campbell. But yesterday was extremely ineffective, and they still stuck to that strategy. So a little bit odd there. And the Eagles took advantage of a few short fields, also gave the Lions a short field at the end of the game, very questionably. But in the end, they escaped with a victory, not clean on either side, but two contenders battling it out. So the Eagles will be happy to get away with the win. And talking about two contenders fighting it out, the Rams beat the Seahawks to seize control of the NFC West at 8-2. Seahawks now move to 7-3. Big win by the Rams as they really just took advantage of Sam Darnold throwing four interceptions to win that game. They have just frustrated Sam Darnold ever since they've started playing him in the NFC. He has had a lot of trouble figuring out that Rams defense, and it was no different on Sunday.
All right, that wraps up our look at the NFL and basketball and football action. Let's switch gears, move to basketball action, starting in the NBA in the Eastern Conference.
In the top of the Eastern Conference, you have the Detroit Pistons again, which I saw something that I think it's been exactly 2 years since the well, it was exactly 2 years at that point that Cade Cunningham made a statement after they had lost, I think, seven or eight games in a row, and said that they didn't have a team that should have been the worst team in the league. They weren't playing or didn't have the talent level of a team that should be embarking on a long losing streak. Of course, famously, they proceeded to lose 27 games in a row. And it was the NBA record, of course. And now all of a sudden, you have a Pistons team just 2 years later that has now made the playoffs and now has won 10 games in a row to surge to the top of the Eastern Conference standing. So congratulations, the Pistons. It has to have been a really long time since this team won 10 games. I don't have the stat on it, but it's got to be a while. So congrats to them for their great start to the season. Then you have the Cavs, who are up here as expected at 10-5. They're supposed to be the best team in the East, or at least one of the best teams in the East. So this is expected of them. What it's not expected of is Toronto. They should not be 9-5, and here they are. They've won 4 in a row. They're 8-2 in their last 10. A roster that really wasn't supposed to be super, super competitive. I mean, they were supposed to be good, but not great. They're now sitting in the third seed in the East, but they are tied with the team who has finally turned it on with some high preseason expectations. The Atlanta Hawks are 9-5 now after winning their last 5. Most of these games without Trae Young, which is a little bit interesting. But it's a big deal for the Hawks to be able to get those wins. Without him, Jalen Johnson has been really, really great for this team. But of course, Trae Young has just played in 5 games this season. And this team is 9-5. So good sign for things or of things to come because in theory, they should get better when he comes back. Although there's some evidence to the contrary on that in terms of their records when he's there and when he's not in team history, but that's a different discussion. Not going to have that right now. It's a much longer discussion. And then you have the Knicks, who are 8-5. They also should be up here playing solid basketball. They'll probably go on a long winning streak at some point in time and kind of really soar up these standings. But for now, they're happy to be in the position they are. The Sixers are 8-5. Also, I think they're very happy with their position. Joel Embiid has really been, I guess you could say, on a minutes limit. He's only played 6 games, 23 minutes per game in those games. He's been really good, averaging 20 points per game in 23 minutes, which is a ridiculously high number. But the real story, obviously, has been Vijay Ejgom, who's one of the contenders for Rookie of the Year at this point, averaging 15.5, 6 rebounds, 4.5 assists, and also 1 steal per game. So he's playing really great minutes for this team. So we'll see what happens with this team as the year goes on, because Paul George has also only played 1 game and just played that last night. So we don't know what this team has in store for us in the rest of the season. But for now, they're happy that they got Paul George back. He played 21 minutes in his return. Didn't look great, but you know what? It's his first game back from injury. We can give him a break. And Tyrese Maxey was there to carry the day at 39 points yesterday, while Paul George kind of struggled. So they're fine for now. They need to be healthy. They need to get healthy and stay healthy, which is kind of the motto of any NBA team, but especially a very injury-prone 76ers roster. Then you have the Heat, who are 8-6. The Bucks, or excuse me, the Bulls, who are 7-6, and the Bucks, who are 8-7, technically tied for that 8-9 spot. The Magic, a team with high expectations that hasn't really lived up to it yet. They're 7-7 on the season, tied with the Celtics for what would be the last spot in the play-in at 7-7 as well. Then you have the bottom of the East, the Hornets at 4-10, the Nets at 2-11, the Wizards at 1-12, and the Pacers at 1-13. I mean, obviously, we knew that losing Tyrese Haliburton would be a big deal. Losing Miles Turner wasn't going to help either, but it is kind of crazy to see that the rest of this roster has just completely fallen apart and self-destructed without the presence of Tyrese Haliburton to kind of steer the ship. It's been a really, really bad year for the Pacers, and frankly, it doesn't look like it's getting any better anytime soon. If you want to talk about the opposite of that, you have their opponent from the NBA Finals last year, the Oklahoma City Thunder, who are 14-1. They have won 6 in a row. I don't think we will see another team that dominates the regular season quite like OKC has done the last few years for really a long time. I mean, in the age of load management, that's probably only getting worse on a lot of injured players. It's really hard to build a team that's this deep. And really, you have the 11th and 12th guys for the Thunder playing seventh or eighth man minutes with some injury issues right now, just because Jalen Williams has been out. Andrew Wiggins has, or Aaron Wiggins, excuse me, has missed some time. I mean, even their first round draft pick, Thomas Sorber, also tore his ACL in the offseason. So this team's going to get better in the next few years, which is also crazy because they already won a title. They're going to be harder and harder to stop. And they're just already the deepest team in the league, which makes everything a little more difficult for all the other teams. And also, Shea has been an Iron Man. So they're led by an MVP candidate, MVP Iron Man, and then also just have ridiculous depth. So it's really, really hard for this team to lose any games. And speaking of that, same thing with the Nuggets, who are led, of course, by Nikola Jokic. They are 10-3 on the season, having a great year again. The Rockets have also been hot recently. They have won four in a row to get to 9-3 on the season, second in the West, or excuse me, third in the West. The Lakers are 10-4. They're 8-2 in their last 10. So after a slow 2-2 start, they have really, really turned it on. And now LeBron is coming back. He hasn't played in a game this season. And yet here the Lakers are at 10-4. And he has now turned the corner in his injury rehab and is reportedly, I think, questionable for, I forget if it's tonight or tomorrow's game against the Jazz, but he'll be coming back soon, whether it's, the next 2 days or maybe this weekend. But he is definitely ready to come back and play. And that'll obviously make a huge impact on that Lakers team that's already playing pretty well, even without him. And then you have the opposite of that. The Spurs are at 9-4, but Victor Wembanyama strained his calf. He's going to miss a few weeks. So that will obviously impact the Spurs, but they should be fine long term. Just need to get him back and healthy and just get healthy as a team overall and keep doing what they're doing for the 2 or 3 weeks that he misses. And then hopefully he comes back in the amazing form that he's already been in. Then you have the Timberwolves. They are 9-5. The Warriors, who have won three in a row to get to 9-6. The Suns, who are 8-6 on the season now, I would argue maybe one of the surprises in the league, considering how down everybody was on this roster after the last few years and then trading away KD. But they're having a decent season so far. Then you have the Trailblazers at 6-7, and the Utah Jazz at 5-8 are somehow the 10th seed in the West, which is crazy because normally the West is the deeper conference that has, the 7-7 teams or the 8-7 teams that are outside of the playoffs looking in. This year, it's the opposite, the 5-8 Jazz technically vying for a spot. That is because there's a giant pile up at the bottom. The Grizzlies and the Clippers and the Mavericks all only have 4 wins, 4-10 for the Grizzlies and Clippers, 4-11 for the Mavericks. The Kings are 3-11, having lost six in a row. And the Pelicans are 2-12. They have lost six in a row, and they fired their coach, Willie Green, in the middle of last week. So, not too deep in the West this year, but the top of the West looking as good as ever.
All right, that wraps up our look at the NBA. Let's keep it with basketball, but turn our attention to college basketball with a look at last week's significant action.
Starting off, we go back all the way to Monday, in what was, I don't want to say a long week in college basketball, but Michigan beat Wake Forest 85-84 in overtime. Obviously, again, what I'm saying, I don't really want to say it was a long week. We have Feast Week coming up. The weeks will get a lot longer than this one. But I guess you could say it was the start of real action in the non-conference. Michigan starting that off looking pretty shaky in that win, but you know what they say, a win's a win. A neutral court win over a team that could end up quad one by the end of the season, probably more likely high quad two. Louisville, though, on the other hand, getting an obvious quad one win, beating number 9 Kentucky 96-88. Kentucky was actually KenPom's number one team in the country heading into this game against the Cardinals, and they got shut down. Well, not shut down. They did score 88 points, but Louisville's offense showed that Kentucky's defense maybe a little more vulnerable than they had shown in previous games. Louisville, funny enough, this is the fewest points they've scored all season. Yeah, so bad night for the Louisville offense is a 96-point game against the number one team according to KenPom. So that's a pretty good sign for Louisville as things progress going forward. They just have a really great roster, stacked from top to bottom. Some of the best guard play in the country, including Mychael Brown, who's probably going to be a top five pick, a one and done for them, started for USA's under 19 team in the summer. And then the experienced options, literally, they have three guards who make up a transfer class that ranked, I think, top three, despite the fact that there were only three transfers in it. So they are an experienced team, and they are a really, really lethal team offensively, as we saw this week. Speaking of a team who maybe doesn't fit that script, Florida. They have kind of struggled out of the gates, but they beat Florida State 78-76. Needed some late buckets, some clutch stops as well, but they did gut out the victory. They should be happy again. A win's a win, but hasn't necessarily looked the part of defending champions so far this year. Then you have number 14, Illinois. They beat number 11, Texas Tech, 81-77 at home. This win was really important because JT Toppin scored 35 points. He was completely unstoppable against Illinois, and Illinois didn't have Tomislav Ivicic in this game, who is their best defensive center and, well, arguably best defensive center, at least their best offensive center, best big man on the team. And even without him, against one of the best big men in the country, if not the best big man in the country, they still gutted out a win. So that is a big sign for Illinois moving forward. Although the gauntlet isn't over just yet, they play Alabama tonight. So we'll see what that team is made of once again when they play that game. Last year, that was an 100-87 victory for Alabama. So we'll see if Illinois can get revenge this year. But you have number 19, Gonzaga, who beat number 23, Creighton, 90-63. Gonzaga has been blitzing teams to start the year. They do not get stopped. They just keep scoring no matter what you do. Not even going to mention it, but last night they scored 122. Their lowest scoring output of the season was 77 on the road at Arizona State. This is just an unstoppable team right now. They're just playing so well offensively, and they might continue to rise as the season goes on. They might even be a top 10 team by the end of the year. I'd argue they're a top 10 team right now, and they're now ranked 13th in the recent AP poll. Then you have Cincinnati, who beat Dayton 74-62, a good win for Cincinnati, who has looked the part of a tournament team so far, and I think that was a commanding enough victory to reinforce that sentiment. Purdue beat Alabama, like we talked about in predictions. That's a true road win over. That's going to be a true road quad 1A win, which is hard to come by. Pretty much none of those. And you will hear the committee talking about that on Selection Sunday, likely when they're putting a one next to Purdue's name, and saying one of the reasons why they are a one seed is because they beat Alabama on the road in the non-conference. That is something that, I mean, those games don't even come about pretty much ever. But let alone the win in that matchup. So important game for Purdue. Also worth noting, they play in the Bahamar Championship this weekend, which or this week actually in the middle of the week, which means that they get a game against Memphis and then they get a game against either Wake Forest or Texas Tech. Either of those games could be a pretty big one for Purdue later in the season. But if they go 2-0, if this team has a 6-0 start against that schedule, look out for the rest of college basketball. Going to be hard to claw that one seed away from them. But then you have West Virginia, who beat Pitt 71-49. Not necessarily two teams that are entirely on the tournament radar, but you know what? It's fun that they're playing the backyard brawl, and I want to highlight that, especially that they're playing it on a Friday night in basketball when you know there are not other football games to watch. Or excuse me, I think this was Thursday night, but. You know, not a lot of eyes on a lot of other things, and they have a good rivalry that they should be playing in front of eyes. And I like that they worked it out so that that worked out this weekend. Then you have number six, Michigan, who beat TCU 67-63 on the road. Again, a win is a win for Michigan. I think Dusty May and his bunch are still trying to figure out the rotations, how often they should be playing that three big lineup, how often it should just be two bigs. He's had a four guard lineup in there once or twice, which is strange considering that you could argue maybe four of the best five players on the team were all big men. So it's an interesting discussion. It's an interesting team that Michigan has, but this is the same story as last year, except the difference is Michigan has won these close non-conference games. Unlike last year, where they lost to Wake Forest in that neutral site game. And then, yes, they did beat TCU, but it was at home and it wasn't really that easy of a win, despite TCU not looking too great all of last year. And then obviously they lost to Arkansas later in the non-con. So there's a lot of things that you could argue about this Michigan team, but for now they're just going to be happy that they're winning games and they hope to keep improving game by game. And obviously the big test will be next week in the Players Era Festival. We'll see. I mean, there are 18 teams that we're going to learn a lot about in that event. Not one of those teams, but one of those teams that is continuously challenging itself is Arizona. They beat number 15 UCLA 69-65. The one thing I want to say about Arizona is that Tommy Lloyd has scheduled like a madman because just after they beat UCLA, a week and a half after they beat Florida, they're playing UConn tomorrow night on the road. And then they also play Auburn and Alabama before they get into their conference schedule. So don't ask me why they're scheduling like that. I mean, I'm very, very happy that they are because it gives me a lot of entertaining games to watch. But it's a little crazy. But so far, they're undefeated. So they're better for it. Then you have Gonzaga, that game that I talked about. They beat Arizona State 77 to 65. Northwestern beat DePaul 81 to 79. Northwestern has really looked like a potential tournament team doing it on the offensive end, though, not on the defensive end like normal, which is kind of strange. Then you have Iowa, who beat Xavier 81 to 62. Iowa kind of asserting themselves as a force to be reckoned with in the middle of the Big Ten standings this year. Georgia beat rival Georgia Tech 92 to 87, which was a big win for them. Number three, UConn beat number seven, BYU 86 to 84, which is a big, big win over the weekend that really UConn needed because the rest of the Big East has looked pretty bad, with the exception of Georgetown, who beat Clemson 79 to 74. And of course, on the other team being St. John's, who still only has already has a loss and hasn't really played anybody other than Alabama. So it remains to be seen how good the Big East actually is. But it might only be three tournament teams once again, which would be pretty weak. And another reason why that might be the case is because, well, Maryland beat Marquette 89 to 82 on the road. So another team able to defeat Marquette, another Big Ten team able to defeat Marquette. That's twice now this season that a Big Ten opponent has gotten the better of Marquette. Speaking of Big Ten, Nebraska beat Oklahoma 105 to 99, a big win for the Cornhuskers. And then number one, Houston beat number 22, Auburn 73 to 72. We're running out of time, so I can't say too much, but I really could not say enough about Kingston Flemings. I could do a whole 20-minute talk about what he did in this game. Just a really, really impressive freshman. I think he had 18, 3, and 3 in the first half of a ranked game, which is just ridiculous. Considering Kelvin Sampson also doesn't necessarily trust freshmen typically. So the fact that Sampson has put his trust behind him means that he's the real deal. Probably will be a lottery pick in the draft if he decides to leave after 1 year. And if he decides to stay, watch out. Then you have number 10, Florida, who beat Miami 82-68. Looking more like the championship form selves that they can be. And finally, you have number 25, NC State, a team that I'm very high on, who beat VCU 85 to 79 last night. Will Wade taking on his former squad that he used to coach back in the day, and coming up with the home victory, a really important one for NC State.
All right, that wraps this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, November 25th, where we will once again talk about Patrick's weekend prediction, review college football and NFL action, review the week in the NBA, and have another look back at the week of college basketball action. In the meantime, please be sure to check out Patrick's picks for next weekend's games, which will be posted as always on Thursday on social media, and also check out Patrick's College Hoops Bracketology, also on social media. All those at our handles at 4th and 24. That's the number 4, THAND, plus the number 24. Thank you for listening.